Okay, so I've been talking for quite a while. What I want to do now is maybe open it up. You can ask questions, make comments, share some of your reflections. Just trying to share a little bit with you about how karma works. Yeah?
Can you speak a little bit about how being forgiving to other people plays into karma?
Okay, so how does being forgiving to other people play into karma? My definition of forgiving is that we stop being angry. Okay, forgiving just means that we've decided we're going to stop being angry. Why? Because anger doesn't create happiness for the other person and especially for us. Because when we hold on to anger, okay, what's going on in our mind? Negative action of malicious thought, isn't it? You know, I'm so mad they do this. Oh, I wish I could give them a taste of their own medicine. Oh, I wish they knew how I felt doing this. You know, we start thinking very malicious thoughts. That creates the mental karma. By the power of the malicious thoughts, we may sometimes say things, we may sometimes do things. So it creates more negative karma. If we forgive somebody, we stop being angry. So all that mental, verbal, physical karma doesn't, negative karma doesn't happen. Yeah.
If you need to forgive yourself, it's something more related to guilt.
Okay, so forgiving ourselves and guilt. Guilt is an interesting one, okay? According to Buddhism, guilt is a negative emotion. Okay? In other words, guilt is a hindrance on the path. Why? Because when we're guilty, we sit there and go, I'm so terrible, I'm so awful, how could I have done this? I can't believe I did this. No wonder nobody loves me. I'm going to be in the hell realms forever. This is terrible. I'm so corrupt. Okay, who's the star of the show when we're feeling guilty? Me! And guilt is another form of self-centeredness. Okay, that's why it's an emotion to be abandoned on the path. Regret, on the other hand, is something very useful. Okay, if we regret properly, okay. If we regret doing positive actions, then we're doing the wrong thing. But if we regret negative actions, okay, then that helps us to purify. Okay, so regret and forgiving ourselves can go together. Okay, if I made a mistake, I did something. Let's say I said something very mean to somebody. Okay, I regret it. I'm not going to sit there and feel guilty about it and beat myself up about it, but I'm going to regret it and purify and forgive myself and make a determination to be much more careful about how I speak in the future. Okay, so forgiving ourselves often leads us to making that strong determination to behave differently in the future.
Do something good for someone because I want to make good karma, but I think I want a good rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Does that balance itself out because it's not the right reason to do something?
Okay, so you do something because you want to create good karma because you want a good rebirth. That is, from a Buddhist viewpoint, that is a good motivation. Okay? It's true, it's still focused on your own happiness, but it's a long-term motivation because you're thinking of having a good rebirth. Most of our motivations in our life are centered around my happiness now. Aren't they? Yeah? So the first way to break us out of that prison of my happiness now or my happiness this life is to get us to start thinking about future lives. So creating good karma now because you want to have a good rebirth, that's good karma. Yeah, don't beat yourself up over that. You know, it's interesting that this point because in Asia, you know, people grow up, they learn about karma from the time they're this big. They really believe in karma. And so among the lay people, they really have this strong feeling of, you know, I'm going to make offerings to the Buddha Dharma Sangha because it creates good karma. I'm going to offer to a charity that creates good karma. I'm going to take precepts twice a month. It creates good karma. And their motivation is for a good rebirth. Okay. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, that's a good motivation. It's not yet the motivation to attain nirvana or enlightenment, but it's definitely better than I'm going to be generous so that they put my name on a plaque. Right? Which is a lot of times why we're generous, because we want everybody to see our name. Yeah? So we shouldn't put ourselves down when we do this. What I find interesting is Westerners, you know, we're a little bit stuck up. So we look at the Asian community and, oh, well, they're giving offerings to the temple with this selfish motivation to have a good rebirth. I'm not going to have that selfish motivation and do that. So I'm just not going to give offerings. Yeah? Dumb. I mean, we miss an incredible opportunity to create good karma out of our own inverted sense of, you know, being morally superior and not, you know, doing a positive action simply out of the selfish reason to create good karma for future life. You know? So we don't do anything positive at all. Are you getting what I'm saying? You know, that's dumb. That's done. Yeah. And when there's an opportunity to create karma, even if our mind isn't thinking about enlightenment, yeah? Even if we're thinking about future lives, go for it. Yeah? Because if you look at how we live so much of the rest of our life, we don't even have that good motivation. Yes?
So you're saying it is a little selfish to think about that, but
you're
going in the right direction,
yeah.
Okay?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you are thinking about your own future rebirth. Okay. And it's a rebirth still within cyclic existence. But you're definitely going in a good direction. Okay? Because it's stretching our mind to think of the long-term results of our actions and not just work for the happiness of this life. Because it's all the actions we do where we're focusedly on the happiness of this life that creates so much negative karma. Okay, so somebody has created a negative karmic action. They don't believe in karma. Can we counteract it? We can't purify anybody else's karma. Okay, if it were possible for somebody to take, for example, us, we created a ton of negative karma. If it were possible for the Buddha to take it away from us, Buddha would have done it already. Okay, but creating positive karma and purifying negative karma, it's like eating and sleeping. You have to do it yourself. Okay, I can't say, look, I'm really tired. I don't have enough time. Can you sleep a few hours for me? Okay, wouldn't that be nice? Or maybe you're wishing other people would say to you, can you sleep a few hours for me? Oh, yeah, bodhicitta, sure, I'll sleep some extra hours. Okay. But okay, let's say we know somebody who's created a negative karmic action. They don't believe in karma. There might be a way sometimes in, depending on what kind of relationship you have with them, where you just start discussing things, you know. You go home and say, oh, I went to this Buddhist talk and she was talking about karma. And your friend says, oh, what's karma? I read about it in Newsweek magazine. You know, well, anything you read in Newsweek, you know, probably don't have the right understanding. Yeah. OK. okay, so this is what karma is all about. And then your friend starts to think, where can I learn more about that? Okay. Or you get a Buddhist book and you just leave it on the coffee table. You know, you don't push, but you just leave it around. Maybe, yeah, somebody picks it up and reads it sometime. Often talk about six perfections or six far-reaching attitudes. The first one's generosity, ethical discipline, patience, joyous effort, concentration, and wisdom. So instead of listing out all six, it says generosity and so forth. Okay, generosity is the first one because it's the easiest. That's a little humbling, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, in one way we can be incredibly generous, and in another way we can be so miserly. But generosity is said to be one of the easiest practices to do. Because even, you know, people, common people in the world who don't know anything about religion are generous. No? And because basically all the well-being of society is based on generosity, isn't it? I mean, if people weren't generous, this society would cease to function. Because we give our service, we give our material goods, we give money, we give love, we give protection, we give time, we give work. I mean, life is about giving. And so to really take generosity and giving as a chief practice in our life and start in a small way and then increase it, you know, keep pushing our boundaries. The time of the Buddha, there was one person who was very stingy, you know. So the Buddha had her practice taking a carrot and giving it from one hand to the other. Sometimes I think that person must have been me in a previous life, you know. You're just going like this just to learn to give. And then someday you put it in a third hand. But if we see ourselves as part of a large organism, then giving becomes easy. Yeah, helping becomes easy because the hand helps the foot. It's no big deal. Why? Because the hand and the foot are part of the same organism. If we see ourselves as part of the same organism of life, then we help others. We're generous to them. Because we're all part of the same organism. Yeah. At Shravasti Abbey, we don't charge anything for anything. Even you come and stay there, we don't charge. Even you take a book, we don't charge. You know, we have a Dana bowl out there. We hope people will contribute Dana, because otherwise we're going to starve. But, but, you know, the reason, and I'm very, you know, it's a totally un-American way of doing things, you know, because people will come to the Abbey and they'll say, how much do I owe? And I say, you don't owe anything, but you can give something. Well, that's nice, how much do I give? You know, it's like we're so used to in America just paying money for services, you know, or paying money for goods. And if you do Dharma like that, then you don't create any positive karma. You know? So if people bought the books or if people pay rent at the Abbey, they don't create any good karma. And we don't create any good karma either because it's business. Okay? But if we give books, we give space to sleep, we give Dharma instruction, then other people feel inspired, then they give, then everybody creates good karma. Yeah. And everybody feels happy because when we're generous, we feel happy. When we're miserly, we feel horrible. Okay, so that's why generosity's first, because it's the easiest one for us to do. And, you know, we can get an immediate sense of fulfillment from it.
Mm-hmm. I still stuck on this point about creating karma and that being, if you think about it in a selfish way,
Okay, so you're saying that if you're thinking, oh, if I'm generous because that will make me wealthy in a future life, that will impede your action of just actually naturally acting compassionate. Not necessarily, because we may not naturally act compassionate. We may naturally act stingy. Okay? And if we think, oh, there will be some benefit in a future life, that may help us to access that natural compassion and give. Okay? Because we can see lots of situations where we're miserly, can't we? Am I the only one? No? Can you think of situations in which you've, there's this fear of giving? You know how when we make the mandala offering, it says, I'm going to give without a sense of loss? But sometimes giving is hard because we feel if I give, I won't have it anymore. Yeah? So sometimes when we have that fear of giving because we're afraid of feeling loss, if we can think, oh, but giving is the cause of wealth. So, okay, it will bring some good benefit. Future life, then that helps us get in touch with the wish to give in the times when we don't really have it. Okay?
Wish to give for ourselves. It's still
selfish. It's still selfish, but it's better than not giving at all, isn't it? Because giving with the idea to benefit ourselves in a future life, that self in the future life isn't the same person we are now. I mean, we live in a very wealthy country. Why? Because in a previous life, whoever we were was generous. Do you remember that person you were in a previous life who was generous? No. But somehow that person did something that was pretty good because we're experiencing tremendous result from it. Okay? So it's, we'll save money for our old age. I mean, you put money in 401k or in the stock market or something, right? Why do you do it? For old age. Is old age definite? No. Might die before we get there. Okay. Is future life definite? Yes. Do you see investing in the stock market as selfish? No. Actually, it's much more self-centered than giving the money to create the positive karma for your life.
In karmic terms, how does it balance out if, for example, you perform a generous act, like give a church 20,000 shares of a stock that's worth a lot of money, but you're doing it for selfish reasons for a tax break?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if doing something good for a rotten motivation... Okay. Giving... Giving the shares of stock, your example, to the charity because you want a tax break. Okay. There's also giving the stock to the charity because you want to see your name on the plaque. Okay. I mean, the tax break, I guess it depends like how.
But it did great things for the people that he gave.
Right. And you get some little bit of karma, good karma, because the action of generosity is something good, but basically it's not a positive action because your motivation wasn't very positive. Okay? In terms of tax break, that situation, or the other one too, the other example, one could just change one's motivation and say, yes, I get a tax break, that's nice, but really... Won't it be nice, that these people have some extra funds to continue the good work they do? You just take some time and stop and, change your motivation. Try try and think about your motivation. And then your other example of, you know, you try and help somebody and you do it wrong. I mean, if it's just a natural accident that what you did, there's no negative karma from that.
And it caused a lot of damage.
Well, then you have to replace what you damaged. Okay, but you didn't have the intention to damage something.
Mm-hmm. Is there an age of accountability? If you're a child, you think a lot of negative karma, you don't understand, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay, so what about kids when you know, you haven't really been educated with some sense of moral values yet? Yeah, you still create karma, but I don't think it would depend on the person whether it would be worse or not as bad. Okay? Because sometimes if we know an action is negative and we do it, That knowing that it's negative also makes us have some regret while we're doing it, or it makes us do, you know, some kind of cleansing process afterwards. Okay. But for kids who don't know, I mean, kids, there's a lot that kids know.
I was thinking about, like, generating anger. Say you're being abused or something and you generate anger, and then...
So kids getting abused and... Okay, so kids getting abused, they're generating anger. There's some good there's some negative karma there, but you know, you can understand why it comes about. Still negative karma, and the child can purify it later.
One question: when you were explaining the third general quality of karma, if you don't create the cause, you don't get the result. You use the 911 metaphor, like some people might decide, well, it's not going to work that day, and so. And as a result, they weren't in the building.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you didn't create the cause, you know, to be there at the time the building collapsed or whatever, then you're not going to be there because there's not the karma that's going to get you to the building.
So is it just that one decision and that one result?
It's the absence of the karma that gets you to the building. Okay, in other words, it's not necessarily that you created a good karma that kept you from getting to the building. It's that you didn't create the bad karma that would have gotten you to the building.
So would that be saying all those people who were at the building karma?
Yeah, whenever we experience suffering, it's a ripening, it's a result of our own negative karma. That doesn't mean that people deserve to suffer. It doesn't mean you blame the victim. It doesn't mean people who are suffering are morally inferior. It simply means that whenever we experience suffering, it's the result of our own actions. We've all experienced suffering, right? We may not have been in the trade towers when they collapsed, but we've all experienced suffering. We've all created negative karma. Okay? So we should not put some kind of pejorative thing on this. Because in Buddhism, it's not... Karma ripening is not a system of rewards and punishment. Yeah? If you project reward and punishment, that's Sunday school. Okay, that's theistic Sunday school. It isn't reward and punishment. Yeah, if you plant apple seeds, you get apple trees. Yeah, if you do negative karma, get unhappiness. Yeah. Plant roses, you get roses. Create positive karma, get... Okay?
You mentioned how Buddhism would be quite a bit different from theistic.
Uh-huh. You mean if a Christian is doing a good thing in order to get in heaven, is that a
equivalent to the Buddha doing good karma
for the future life? There's some difference. Okay, there's some difference because the Christian paradigm is reward and punishment. Okay, the Buddhist paradigm is just cause and effect. Just cause and effect. You're not trying to, please a god or do something like that. I mean, definitely from the viewpoint of, I mean, if a Christian is motivated to do positive action with the thought of getting into heaven, that is in similar in some ways, you could say, to a Buddhist doing something with the thought of having a good future life. Yeah. And it's definitely better than somebody just not caring at all about their actions and following whatever ridiculous impulse pops into their mind. I mean, all religions teach some form of ethical discipline, don't they? They all teach some way that encourages their followers to abandon negative actions and to create positive action. So, you know, whatever theological reason they have for it, the practical function of it is that, you know, society works better and people don't create so much negative karma and create some positive karma.
What I'm wondering is like what the Buddha experiences at enlightenment. Uh-huh. It's like, is enlightenment like the extinguishing of all karma that you feel?
Okay. We've been talking a lot about karma. You're asking basically what role karma has in producing enlightenment or in creating the experience of a Buddha. We've been talking so far about karma in relationship to future lives. Okay, karma also influences just whether our mind is receptive to gaining spiritual realizations or not receptive. Okay, if we create a lot of negative karma, it obscures our mind and it makes it much more difficult to understand the teachings. It can make it difficult for you to hear the teachings and even get to a place where you can hear the teachings. It can make you fall asleep when you're meditating. You know, it can make you get distracted when you meditate. It makes your knees hurt. I mean, negative karma can interfere with our spiritual practice, and it can just generally make our mind obtuse so that it's hard to understand the teachings and gain the correct understanding of them and meditate and integrate that understanding. So one reason that we do a lot of purification practice is to cleanse the mind of that karma so that when we study the teachings or reflect on them or meditate on them, we can actually generate some wisdom through that process. Okay? What nirvana is the stopping of all the karma that could create a rebirth within cyclic existence. Okay? Because cyclic existence, you know, this constantly recurring cycle of suffering that is taking one rebirth after another under the influence of mental afflictions and karma. Okay? If we stop the cause, the afflictions, then we stop the karma that creates the next rebirth. Okay? So that's nirvana. That's liberation when we're free from that cycle. So that karma has all been purified, which the karma which can produce rebirth and cyclic existence has been stopped, has been purified, and no new karma has been created. Okay? In terms of enlightenment, because full enlightenment is even a higher realization than nirvana, then we have to create even more positive karma or positive potential to generate all those realizations that have to come together to attain full enlightenment. But definitely, you know, when you're a Buddha, then you're beyond that kind of karma that creates the cause for suffering by cyclic existence. Okay, let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes and reflect on what we've heard.